Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or Maya, and at the same time they maintain that He is unconditioned. This is against all logic. Please repeat. Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or Maya, and at the same time they maintain that He is unconditioned. This is against all logic. Purport. It's quite a long purport, just over 2 pages, well, 2 sides. Sometimes it appears that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is 100% spiritual, cannot be the cause of the illusory potency, which covers the knowledge of the individual soul. But factually, there is no doubt that the illusory external energy is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. When Vyasadeva realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw the Lord along with His external potency, which covers the pure knowledge of the individual living entities. Why the external energy acts in this way may be considered as follows, as analyzed by great commentators like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami. Although the material illusory energy is distinct from the spiritual energy, it is one of the many energies of the Lord, and thus the material modes of nature, the mode of goodness, etc., are surely qualities of the Lord. The energy and the energetic personality of Godhead are not different, and although such energy is one with the Lord, He is never overpowered by it. Although the living entities are also parts and parcels of the Lord, they are overcome by the material energy. The inconceivable Yogam Aishwaram of the Lord is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9.5. Is misunderstood by the froggish philosophers. In order to support a theory that Narayan, the Lord Himself, becomes Daridra Narayan, a poor man, they propose that the material energy overcomes the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, however, offer a very nice example in explanation. They say that although the sun is all light, the clouds, darkness, and snowfall are all part and parcel of the sun. Without the sun, there is no possibility of the skies being overcast by the clouds or darkness, nor can there be snowfall on the earth. Although life is sustained by the sun, life is also disturbed by darkness and snowfall produced by the sun. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. The sun is far, far away from such disturbances. Only those who have poor fund of knowledge, say that the sun is covered by a cloud or by darkness. Similarly, the Supreme Brahman, or the Parabrahman, the personality of Godhead, is always unaffected by the influence of the material energy, although it is one of His energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. There is no reason to assert that the Supreme Brahman is overpowered by the illusory energy. The clouds, darkness, and snowfall can cover only a very insignificant portion of the sun's rays. Similarly, the modes of material nature may react upon the ray-like living entities. It is the misfortune of the living entity, certainly not without reason, that the influence of the material energy acts on his pure consciousness and eternal bliss. This covering up of pure consciousness and eternal bliss is due to avidya karma sangya, the energy which acts on the infinitesimal living entities who misuse their minute independence. According to Vishnu Purana, Bhagavad Gita, and all other Vedic literatures, the living entities are generated from the Tathashta energy of the Lord, and thus They are always the energy of the Lord and are not the energetic. The living entities are like the sun's rays. Although, as explained above, there is no qualitative difference between the sun and its rays, the sun's rays are sometimes overpowered by another energy of the sun, namely by clouds or by snowfall. Similarly, although the living entities are qualitatively one with the superior energy of the Lord, they have the tendency to be overpowered by the inferior material energy. In the Vedic hymns, it is said that the living entities are like the sparks of a fire. The sparks of fire also are fire, but the burning potency of the sparks is different from that of the original fire. When the sparks fly out of touch with the original fire, they come under the influence of a non-fiery atmosphere. Thus they maintain the potency to be again once with the fire as sparks, but not as the original fire. The sparks can everlastingly remain within the original fire as parts and parcels, but the moment the sparks become separated from the original fire, their misfortunes and miseries begin. The clear conclusion is that the Supreme Lord, who is the original fire, is never overpowered, but the infinitesimal sparks of the fire can become overpowered by the illusory effect of Maya. It is a most ludicrous argument to say that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by his own material energy. The Lord is the master of the material energy, but the living entities are in the conditioned state, controlled by the material energy. That is the version of Bhagavad Gita. The froggish philosophers who put forward the argument that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by the material mode of goodness are themselves illusioned by the same material energy. Although they think of themselves as liberated souls, they support their arguments by a false and laborious jugglery of words, which is a gift of the same illusory energy of the Lord. But the poor, froggish philosophers, due to a false sense of knowledge, cannot understand the situation. In the 6th canto, 9th chapter, 34th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Durava Bodha Iva Tavayam Vihara Yogo Yad Asharano Sharira Idam Anavekshitats Asmat Samavaya Atmaiva Vikriyamanena Sagunam Agunaha Srijasi Pasi Harasi. Thus the demigods prayed to the Supreme Lord that although his activities are very difficult to understand, they can still be understood to some extent by those who sincerely engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The demigods admitted that although the Lord is apart from the material influence or creation, he nevertheless creates, maintains, and annihilates the complete cosmic manifestation by the agency of the demigods. End of purport. Maitreya uvacha seyam bhagavato maya yannayena virujyate ishvarasya vimuktasya karpanyam uttabandhanam. Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or maya, and at the same time they maintain that he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I request the blessings of all the devotees. There are a number of senior devotees here, particularly request their blessings. This is quite a philosophical section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And actually, philosophy is one of the mediums through which we ultimately attain love of God. We may look at the scriptures as saying one portion of scripture is philosophical and another portion is lila. But actually, when one becomes purified, then the philosophy is the same as having darshan with Krishna. This is said in, I think it's in the third canto, when Kapila's Shankya philosophy is said to be non-different from Krishna. And if we understand the Bhagavatam, we understand that the first two cantos are the feet of the Lord, and as we go through the cantos, we work up the body of the Lord, and the tenth canto is the head of the Lord. So, taking this statement seriously, we can understand that if we actually approach philosophy correctly, we'll actually have darshan of the various bodily parts of the Lord. So it's very wonderful. Now, there's a little, how shall we say, a bit of confusion. Some of the parts of the philosophy are difficult to understand, and Vidura has actually raised the question, and I've actually extracted four kind of, how shall we say, apparent paradoxical aspects of the philosophy of how the soul relates to matter, and this is all discussed in this section of the Bhagavatam. So I'll give you four examples of how it's very difficult to understand how the soul is transcendental and at the same time it is in, can fall under illusion. So one question that comes up is, how is it possible that the pure soul can engage in nescience? So if we consider this, if we are emanations from Krishna, actually this whole purport is describing us as sparks of Krishna and Krishna as the fire. And the point is that as a spark, when it leaves the fire, it can come under illusion. It can lose its fiery nature. In the same way, because we are very infinitesimal, we can lose our fiery nature. So this analogy helps us understand, but if you consider the question, it's a very good question. How can the pure soul come under nescience? Because purity is transcendental to nescience, so how is it possible for that to happen? Another question, the super soul is in our heart, therefore, how can there be any misery? It's like, if we find ourselves in a miserable position, then we're thinking, well, we can say, well, I'm the jiva. I mean, if we're able to answer the first question, find a good reason why the jiva can be in misery, even though it's transcendental, then you have a second problem, but there's Krishna, there's a super soul there with me. So how can the super soul have to endure what I'm enduring? And that's the logic. The super soul is within my heart. Therefore, if I undergo any kind of suffering, then the logic is, well, maybe the super soul's undergoing suffering because I'm undergoing suffering. The super soul's in the body, therefore it's feeling what I feel. This is another dilemma, how to understand this. The third one is, the jiva is qualitatively one with the Lord. So that's another good point, that the Lord is Satchidananda, pure knowledge, and the jiva is qualitatively one with the Lord, therefore the jiva must surely always be in pure knowledge. How can the jiva, which emanates from pure knowledge, be anything other than in the state of pure knowledge? And the fourth one is, the Lord is the maintainer, Bhuta Brit, it's a phrase used. Therefore, why can there be suffering? If the Lord's maintaining us, he's our well-wisher, why would we suffer? Why would we suffer if he has the power to stop that and he's maintaining us? He's our friend, he's with us, he's the controller. Why is there suffering? So what are the answers to this? Who would like to answer the first one? How is it possible that the pure soul can engage in nescience? Yes. Okay, but then why is the soul entrapped in the first place? If the soul is pure. Okay. Premanava.
It's like the sun's covered by the clouds. The sun's not losing anything, it's still complete. So the living entity is covered by material nature because we identify with this. It's not like that living entity soul is polluted. So because we're covered by material nature like the sun's covered by the clouds.
Yes. It's due to an outside influence. The avidya potency, avidya karma samgyanya, it's referred to as. So that is actually the answer, that the jiva is minute, then it can come under the influence of, like clouds come under the influence. Thank you. Anyone else on that first point before we move to the second one?
The jiva is a tadashta.
Tadashta?
It can go in either category. Prabhupada's giving the example in the purport about being a spark.
Yes.
Spark can be overcome, but the fire can't be overcome.
Yes, so in the purport, Prabhupada explains that the scriptures say that the jiva is tatashta. Can anyone give me any sloka from the scriptures where it's said that the jiva is tatashta shakti? Yes, from Bhagavad Gita. Mamaivangsha jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatanam. Thank you. So, angsha means a part of Krishna. Where any verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the actual word tatashta is used? Jivera Swarupa Hai, Krishnera Nityadas, Krishnera Tatashta Shakti, Beda Beda Prakash. And it goes on, Sur Yangsha Kirana Jaichi Yagni Jwala Chai, Svavabika Krishner Tina, is it Tina? Prakara Shakti Hai. That the jiva is eternal servant of Krishna, is the Tatashta Shakti, which is simultaneously one with and different from Krishna, Beda Beda Prakash. And it's the analogy is then given as just like Suryangsha, the sun has its sparks. The sun, was it? Suryangsha Kirani. Kirana means a sun ray. The sun has its rays. Jaichi Agni Jwala Chai. And in Agni, fire has its burning potency. So if you... Fire may be located in one place, but the influence of fire, the burning potency, can spread throughout a whole room. So similarly, the jivas emanate from Krishna, just like the heat emanates from the fire, or just like the sun ray emanates from the sun. So that's, once we have this analogy, it's called Saka Chandra Nyaya. The scriptures describe things that are very difficult to understand, therefore they give analogies which we can relate to. The Saka Chandra Nyaya means the logic of the branch and the moon. The moon is very far away, the branch is very close. So if you want to indicate the moon to someone, you can point to the branch. The branch is close and it's known. And then you see behind the branch. Now look further, and then you see the moon behind the branch. It's also called Arundhati Darshan Nyaya, which means there's a very faint star called Arundhati. And if you try to point it out directly, no one would see it. So what you first of all do is you point to a constellation very close to that and say, do you see that constellation? The person says, yes. Now, in relation to that constellation, just a little bit to the right or whatever, you will see this faint star. Oh yes, now I see the star. So we point to what is known in order to indicate what is unknown. And the scriptures are simultaneously said that words cannot attain the supreme. You know, if you describe the supreme in words, you cannot do so. But at the same time, there's a certain shakti in the scriptures, so therefore the words themselves have the potency to indicate the supreme. So let's look at the second question. The supersoul is in our heart, so why can there be suffering? So there's a good question. If you're... Now, Tarun is going to give us the answer.
In Bhagavad Gita, it says that somebody is... concocted austerities disturb even super soul.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting when you said why you suffer.
That seems to be proof that it's a good valid question then, isn't it? Premanavapu.
Super soul is a witness.
Yes.
Doesn't get involved. Mm. Just witnesses the activities of the soul, the jiva. And the jiva, due to his minute independence, chooses to suffer.
Okay, but if the supersoul's inside the body, let's suppose supersoul's inside our hearts, then if we go to the toilet, does that mean the supersoul's going to the toilet?
No.
And can we even bear to think that?
No, we're going to the toilet, yeah. Not the supersoul. We're the one that's covered, not Krishna.
So like, you're back to the sun is not covered by the clouds, but we are. Yeah, okay. That's good. Thank you. Adiguru, you said okay. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, Matstani Sarvabhutani. Krishna's within all the living entities. But then in the next verses in chapter 9, na cha matstani bhutani, Krishna says he's not within everything. So this is the achinchabhira-bhira tattva, that the Lord is simultaneously entered and has not entered. So that just gives further clarification to this point, that yes, the supersoul is entered within the hearts of all the living entities, but at the same time has not entered. Sometimes the analogy is given a crystal. Crystal may reflect so many rays. So then there are many rays, but then they're all coming from the crystal. So there's only one crystal, but many rays. In the same way, there's one supersoul manifested in as if many. But there's actually one. And that one supersoul is in another realm. It's not in this material world. The rays, they may appear to be within the hearts of all the living entities, but the supersoul is actually transcendental. And one of the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam indicates the simultaneous entering and non-entering of the Lord. It's, how is it going? Yata mahanti bhutani putesh uchavacheshvanu pratishtan a pratishtani tatateshu nateshvaham. So the idea is, just as the great elements like earth, water, fire, air, ether, they have entered into everything, but at the same time they have not. Because if you think about it, the earth of this planet is just a tiny fraction of the overall earth. So the earth has not actually entered, but at the same time earth has entered. In the same way, Krishna is simultaneously pratishtani, which means he's entered, and apratishtani, he has not entered. And Prabhupada gives the example of Atlas. Now, recently we had Europe's strongest man came to Bhaktivedanta Manor. He's married to an ex-Gurukuli. So one of his things is he carries the Atlas stones. These big, huge, round stones. They have this competition, world's strongest man. His brother is world's strongest man. He was defeated. Imagine that. He's not even the strongest man in his own family, but he's Europe's strongest man. So one of the things he does, you have this competition, you have these big Atlas stones, and they have to pick them up, and each one gets bigger than the one before, and they have to lift it on a platform, and then you get time to see how quickly you can do it. So Prabhupada gives the example. He said, when Krishna is holding the universes, it's not like Atlas. Because you see the picture of Atlas with the earth on his shoulder, and he's kind of straining. Yeah. So Krishna, because he's so perfect, he can do it effortlessly. Actually, where does the gravity come from? Prabhupada says it comes from Shankarshan, who is Balaram, Krishna's brother. So Balaram is controlling gravity. So there's no question that when Krishna has all the universes in his body, that he's feeling any kind of weight. It doesn't weigh him down. It said, Koti Brahmanda Vigraha. One of the names of the Lord is he from whom infinite universes emanate. You know, Koti Brahmanda Vigraha. All these universes emanating from him, but he's light. Doesn't get affected by it. So let's look at the third question. The jiva is qualitatively one with the Lord. It's kind of similar kind of argument, but it's maybe slightly different. Qualitatively one with the Lord, how then is it possible that the jiva experiences material life? It's kind of similar, but the analogy is, the question then really is phrased this way is, how is it possible that the cause is different from the effect? You see, I'll give you an example. If we have sweets come from sugar cane. If you start off with salt, you won't be able to make a sweet, right? Because the cause is similar to the effect. So by analogy, if Krishna is all knowledge and we are emanating from him, how can we be the opposite? Now, we've kind of covered it already. Anyone like to give any particular thought on that one? Yes. Anu and Vibhu, yes.
Because he's so small, his knowledge becomes covered. But Krishna's knowledge, it never becomes covered. So,
yes. This is actually how it is answered. It's because qualitatively one, but quantitatively different. And because of that quantitative difference, then it can be said that the jiva can be influenced by avidya, whereas Krishna cannot be influenced by avidya. Even though, one of the most, for me, the most amazing sentence in this purport was the following. Although the material illusory energy is distinct from the spiritual energy, it is one of the many energies of the Lord, and thus the material modes of nature, the mode of goodness, etc., are surely qualities of the Lord. That's a very amazing statement, because what does etc. mean? Mode of goodness, etc. means mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. And it's saying these are surely qualities of the Lord. So what does that mean? How can we say ignorance is a quality of the Lord? What exactly is being said here? Anyone like to give an explanation for that? For me, it means emanations from the Lord. They're coming from him, therefore they're his qualities. But there also these exist in their pure state, like the modes of nature exist in the spiritual world in their purified state. So we have pure Sudasattva. It said, Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. That Sudasattva, which is the, actually means Satchit and Ananda altogether, that's known as Sudasattva. And then if we want to take a particular part of it, it's called Sudasattva Visheshatma. Now anyone knows the definition of Bhava Bhakti from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sudasattva Visheshatma. I wasn't going to quote this verse. What's the next line? Suryangsha Samyabak. Bhavasiva Sandratma. That's Prema. Anyway, Sudasattva Visheshatma. Anyway, it's saying that the Sudasattva, the Bhava Bhakti is a ray of the, yes, Ruchibish Chittamasrina Kridasau Bhava Uchiti. When a ray of the sun of Prema enters the heart, it causes a softening of the heart. This is known as Bhava Bhakti. It's the first manifestation of Prema proper. So Sudasattva Vishesha means, the word Vishesha means, it's talking particularly about the Chit and the Ananda aspect, or the Samvit and the Hladini aspect of Sudasattva, because Sudasattva has the existential aspect, the Sat aspect as well. We have a devotee, new devotee from Luton. Are you understanding? I'm giving a bit of philosophy here. Apologies if it's new to you. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. And it's, if you look at the description of what is the Bhakti Shakti. Bhakti Shakti is said to be the combination of the Samvit and the Hladini Shaktis. So ultimately, what does it mean to transcend avidya? Avidya is mentioned throughout this particular purport. Avidya is Vishnu Shakti Para Prakta, Kshetra Gyakya Tatapara, Avidya Karma Sangyanya, Tritiya Shaktir Uchati. From the Vishnu Purana, it's said that the Lord's energy are of three categories. The first one is known as Vishnu Shakti, which is the internal potency. The next known as Kshetragya, which is the Jiva, Tatashta. And the third one, Avidya Karma Sangyanya, which is mentioned in this purport. That is the Shakti by which we try and elevate ourselves through fruitive work. Avidya Karma means you think, if I work hard, I will get a result. I will become wealthy. That whole philosophy is avidya, because it neglects the truth. The person who thinks this way doesn't understand that everything is actually given by the Lord. And therefore the proper thing to do is to please Krishna, who gives everything, rather than to try and accumulate wealth through one's own endeavor. So that's the avidya shakti. And so, why did I say that? I was about to say something before that.
You're talking about how the modes are qualities of the Lord ultimately.
Yeah. And in between that, that was the first part, then I did the second part, then the third part was avidya karma. That was, anyway, I'll leave it like that. Prabhupada mentions the term Daridra Narayan. He mentioned this term a lot, and it's the purpose. We've discussed three of the problems as to why the jiva can be in misery. I'll cover the fourth in a second, but before that, the Dharidra Narayan, it refers to poor Narayan, because Dharidra means poor. So Prabhupada is exposing this philosophy, because it was quite common in India, especially at the time of Srila Prabhupada, was this idea that the beggar in the street is Narayan. And therefore, if you feed Narayan, you feed the beggar, you're feeding Narayan. It's considered Madhava Seva, Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. It's another way of looking at it. And Prabhupada was very strong against that, to such an extent that when there was once a drought in Hyderabad, someone wrote to Prabhupada, some humanitarian person, and said, could you come and relieve this? There's a famine. Could you come and distribute your prasadam to the people? Now, from one perspective, that is devotional service, because prasadam is offered to the Lord, so people would not only be relieved of their hunger, they would also make spiritual advancement. So it's a good idea. But Prabhupada, on this occasion, he declined, and he said, our business is to give spiritual knowledge, and if you feed the body but you don't feed the soul, then there's no benefit. So he was actually criticizing the man's philosophy. And in the letter, the man had written that Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, that service to mankind is service to the Lord. And Prabhupada rejected that. Because if we're doing service to man, if we're serving the body, then we're not actually benefiting the soul. And back to Sananda Sarasvati, he went to even greater, how shall we say, extreme. Because this goes against the current of thought. This goes against mundane compassion. So it's not a very palatable thing that these acharyas are saying. So back to Sananda Sarasvati, he used the phrase, Mando Daya Daya. It's like a play on words, because Udaya means arising. So Manda means nescience. Manda Udaya means arising, like that which gives rise to nescience. And Daya also means charity. So if you put the two together, Mando Daya Daya, what it means is that charity or that mercy which Udaya gives rise to, Manda, nescience. What he said was, if you do mundane charity, it's actually counterproductive. And he gave the reason. He said, when a living entity is suffering, then that living entity will seek a solution. And that seeking will bring them ultimately to Krishna, one will hope, by the mercy of the sadhu it will. But if one is comfortable, then there's no motivation to look for a solution. Now, I don't know how you came to Krishna consciousness. Some of you were born into the movement. I came because I was really, really suffering. I was suffering badly, and I was looking for a solution. If I hadn't been suffering, I would have been happily going on with my life because, you know, it was good. There were certain aspects of it were good. But when I hit a problem, hit a crisis, that's when I started started looking for a solution. So if we do charity and it's just mundane, then we're taking away the impetus for people to search for the truth. So it's quite heavy. Let's look at number four. The Lord is Bhuta Brit. So he's maintaining everyone. Why then is there suffering? So this is a slightly different aspect, looking at it from a different angle. And the angle is like this. If you're, to give an analogy, if you're with your father, so when you're a child, you may have suffered distress. There may be a bully, someone picking on you. But when you're with your father, you feel very confident. When a child's with his father, the child feels protected and confident. But if the father's there and the child's still suffering, then there's something wrong. The father isn't a good father. So then the question is, given that Krishna is maintaining all of us and he's within all our hearts, why then should we still be suffering? So it's looking at it from a slightly different angle. It's not like we can look at it from the karmic perspective, why we are suffering, but just from the point of view of when one is with one's guardian and the guardian is also one's well-wisher, why then would they be suffering? It doesn't make any sense. Yes?
I said that the suffering of the jiva is only superficial, just mm-hmm. as his material enjoyment is also superficial. So he's not really suffering on an absolute sense. It's like a dream.
Okay. Deepak, Prabhu?
Even though the Lord is still maintaining the jiva chooses to engage in the suffering. So the protection is still there, but the conditioned soul decides that he doesn't want that protection, even though the protection is still there. So it's kind of like misuse of his minute independence.
Thank you. But here's a question. Why does Krishna not allow us to be in the illusion that we want, but not suffer? Why does he introduce the suffering as well? If we want illusion, if we want to forget him, why does he make us suffer? Why can't he just let it happen in a way that we don't suffer?
Then there would be no impetus to come back to Krishna at all.
Exactly. Jagat Priya Madhusi, were you going to say the similar thing? Yeah, I think that was an obvious question, actually. So yes, she's already... I just had this inclination she would be thinking the same thing. Yeah, so that's... The answers to those questions which are coming up, which are asked by Vidura. And there's more analogies will come in the next couple of verses, but I won't go into them now. But I'll just say one little thing, just to conclude. I like to do these things. There's Krishna, there's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which explains that Krishna is the abode of mutually contradictory characteristics. Amijaichi Praspara, Varuda Dharma Shraya, Radha Prema Taichi Sada, Varuda Dharma Maya. Just as Krishna is the abode of mutually contradictory characteristics, in the same way Srimati Radharani's love is full of mutually contradictory characteristics. Okay? And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it is a contradiction that the snow, the clouds and the rain are coming from the Lord, but they're the opposite to the Lord's qualities. They cover the Lord, but they're at the same time they're coming from the Lord. So what are some of the qualities of Krishna that are mutually contradictory? And then we can look at the qualities of Radha's love that are mutually contradictory. Anyone like to offer some of the... What does it mean that he is full of contradictory characteristics? Srinivas Prabhu, the microphone is just behind you.
I mean, this is in connect with the Leela, pastime. Yes. So Krishna told Radharani that don't trust Narada Muni because if you trust him, he'll cause you envy.
Mm-hmm.
So one time Narada Muni was going and Krishna saw him and Krishna said, what desire would you like? So Narada Muni said, I want you to swing with Lalita on the swing.
Mm-hmm.
So Lalita genuinely assists Radharani.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, Krishna wanted to fulfill Narada Muni's desire. So he forced Lalita to go on the swing with him and they were swinging. And they were swinging, they were saying, Lalita Krishna was... This is how they were singing. So Narada Muni went to Radharani and he told Radharani, Lalita is singing with Krishna.
He's stirring things up.
And then Radharani became angry with Krishna.
Anger, yes.
Anger
is a contradiction. Damodar Leela, what's the contradiction in the Damodar Leela? One is Krishna's fearless, and yet he's afraid of Mother Yashoda. Adiguru Prabhu. That's another aspect, yes.
Although he controls all the great demigods like Indra, Brahma and Shiva, still he comes under the control of his pure devotee.
Yes, that's one of the answers I had as well. Any other ones? There's some from the Ishvapanasad. Yes. He doesn't walk, he's fit, he doesn't move, he's just ever existing, yet he's faster than the fastest. Or Tadduri Tadvantiki, he's very, very far away. I mean, Krishna's Because Krishna is the opposite of matter. I mean, to attain, you can attain the heavenly planets. I mean, you can go in the sky, you can go beyond that to the heavenly realms. But how far away is the spiritual world? It's so far away, and yet he's the closest to us. Even we, in this material world, we have our best friend. But what we don't understand is Krishna is even more dear than our best friend when we actually finally attain him. So he's very far away and very near. Anoraniyam, mahato mahiyam. He's smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. Any other ones? Yes, good. That's just from the same Ishapanasad verse, yeah. He's within everything and yet he's outside of everything. And Radharani's love, what are the contradictions in that? There's three mentioned in the Adi Lila. Very wonderful. You know, Adi Guru? One of them is, her love is the purest and yet it is crooked. Her love is ever expanding, and yet there is no room for expansion. And the third one is, what is it now? I've forgotten the third one now. Anyway, we can look it up. It's now 5:30. Any comments or questions?
I think the third one is to do with our relationship with Krishna. That although Krishna can find no, he doesn't. Anyway, I don't remember it. Anyway, my question is
pure and crooked. Oh, I know what it is. It's her love is the greatest, and yet it is devoid of pride. That's what it is. Contradiction.
My question is, you were talking about how the Shuddhashatma Visheshatma, that the sun ray of love of God when it touches the heart, how that helps you transcend the modes?
That's how we can't actually transcend anything unless we get Bhakti Devi, the outside influence. Just like the jiva cannot be covered without the influence of avidya, the jiva cannot be released without the influence of Bhakti Devi. That's the all I want to see.
So my question,
we can't do it ourselves. Is,
how is Krishna's qualities in the modes of nature in the material realm?
My understanding is that Satchidananda manifests as the modes. But I don't know exactly the Svabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. The Jnana Bala and Shakti, Kriya Shaktis as well. There's a relationship between the modes and the original qualities of Krishna. There's Maya Sukha, Brahma Sukha, and anyway, the internal potency. Hare Krishna.
It's about the chariot.
Turn on the mic, thank you.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. It's about the charity, so and the suffering. Yeah. So when we suffer, two things happen. Either the person who is suffering gives up,
mm-hmm.
or he fights back, or he sort of don't give up. The people who don't give up, they find the way,
mm-hmm.
some or the other. But people who give up, in my experience, their mind is going in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we try to help them in material way or some other way. So if you don't do that, then how does give up mind find Krishna?
How does what, the give up?
A mind that has given up finds Krishna, because they are suffering really. And
yeah, okay. Well, the thing about where does bhakti come from? Bhakcha sanjataya bhakcha, 11th canto. Bhakti comes from bhakti. Therefore, the answer is bhakti has to intervene. There's no question of us becoming lovers of Godhead without the intervention of Bhakti Devi. That comes through causeless mercy. We can't actually accumulate it. So whether one struggles, so you mentioned if someone's suffering, someone may fight back and someone may just give up. But actually neither of them will actually attain Krishna unless Krishna or Krishna's devotee intervenes.
So in that case, if the person keeps suffering, so because Krishna's grace is not in this person, so they are supposed to suffer?
They will suffer until Krishna's grace intervenes. But what will happen is they'll suffer until their karma burns out, and then they'll experience the opposite again. But they'll go around in a circle forever. Samsara cycle goes on forever until Bhakti Devi intervenes. So they'll suffer for a period according to their karma, and then they'll experience the opposite. If they do good deeds, they'll end up with experiencing pleasant material life, but then they'll go back to suffering again, endlessly on a cycle. And the only way to break the cycle is Brahmandi Brahmati Khan Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhaktilata Beach, to get the creeper of devotional service from Guru and Krishna. Thank you. Prayojana Prabhu, are you going to quote Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Jai.
There it is.
Thank you.
It says in it's chapter 12, for one who is not envious, that's an extract from 12, 13 and 14, and is a kind friend to all living entities, who is not thinking of himself as the proprietor. But then I'll go on to the next verse, 12:15. For he who is not put into any difficulty, who is undisturbed, who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress and fear and anxiety, he is very dear to me. My devotee is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure and expert, without cares, free from all pains, and striving for some result. They are very dear to me.
So, wonderful. Thank you. Grantarad, oh, Tarun Prabhu.
You kind of stir my query when you mentioned that those three modes, they exist all in their purified form in spiritual world, but then you elaborate on your Shuddha Sattva. That means that those modes must become goodness and then pure goodness. So where is the place for Shuddha Tama or Shuddha Raja?
It's there in some other form. I can't remember it exactly. I've never heard these phrases for sure.
Of course, I mean, means they must become goodness. That don't mean there's only one Shuddha Sattva, they are not other forms of modes.
I mean, Shuddha Sattva is all, there's three aspects to Shuddha Sattva, right? So, yeah. There's Jnana, Bala, and Kriya, which is Satchidananda. But how that actually transforms to the modes of nature in this world, I don't exactly remember the relationship.
Then in spiritual world, there is no actually ignorance or passion, but then you mentioned that.
Well, it's
kind of
the energy is coming. The source of the energy will have a different. It's beyond my pay grade. I shouldn't have brought it up, actually.
Yeah.
Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.